Hello, I'm David Temple, and welcome to the 25th episode of The Thriller Zone. Man, I am super psyched to have the world-famous and widely known thriller writer and screenplay master Chris Hottie on the show today. Now, Chris and I have been trying to connect for some time, and today looks like all the planets have aligned and we're sitting down to chat novels, movies, screenplays, travel, cooking, family, California, and a lot more. I'm glad you're here because I think you're in for a real treat. No, I know you're in for a real treat. So how about I shut up and get going? There's a lot to do here on the Thriller Zone.
Oh.
Hello. Hey.
Let me, I just put some coffee in the microwave. Let me go. Hey, is it all right if I do this outside?
Hey, I love it. I actually love it.
You know, I did it with one event, and I'm so sick of seeing people's bookcases and rooms, though yours is marvelous. I'm just trying to mix it up for our wonderful viewers.
You know, I'm so glad that you thought ahead. I was just thinking a similar thing, and I thought, well, where could I go? I could go in my backyard, I suppose. And I'm like, well, maybe that'll throw Chris off. He seems so uptight about everything.
Yeah, very sensitive. All right, David, I'll be right back.
All right, I'm going to go get some coffee too then.
All right, good idea, right?
All right, yeah.
While Chris and I are getting coffee, I wanted to take a quick second to say two things. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I know you have a whole lot of choices in podcasts, so the fact that you listen to this one humbles me. I'm really, truly grateful. Number two, if you like it as much as I hope you do, would you do me a quick favor? I promise it won't take but maybe a minute or two. However, it will go miles in helping this podcast to grow. Go to our website, thethrillerzone.com. If you're not already there, and write a quick review. You'll see it right there in the top menu. It can literally be one sentence, just saying how much you like it. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Google or Stitcher or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, you can leave a quick review there too. We'd be so grateful. Okay, that's about it. Looks like Chris and I are making our way back to the microphones. Enjoy the show.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. How's the framing? Framing looks pretty good.
Looks pretty dang special. Where are you out in the... Looks like... Wait a minute. You're not in Venice.
No, I moved about 6 months ago. If I was still in Venice... Can you hear me okay? Has this been the right place?
The closer you can get, the better. But I mean, it's not... It's not bad. What's it sitting on?
It's... I got a little doohickey. No,
doohickey, yeah.
I moved. I'm like in the, you know, you're in LA, aren't you?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, okay. I moved from Venice to, this is officially Glendale, but I identify as Pasadena.
Oh, I love Pasadena.
Yeah, Pasadena is fantastic. So I'm on the hill, like right between Pasadena. I'm much closer to Pasadena than I am to Glendale. So I do everything in Pasadena. So yeah, Venice got to be too much, man.
Yeah.
It just got to be way too much. I was there for about 5 or 6 years after I got a divorce, and I just kind of wanted to, I had a home in Santa Monica and raised a family and all the schools and all that stuff, but then I was ready for something different, and then it just got too different.
Yeah. You know? Well, you put it best, and I often say this to my wife. We lived in Hermosa Beach for 15 minutes when we were coming out from New York, and we came to the conclusion that, and you use this phrase, it's too much.
Yeah.
It's just too much.
It's too much.
Too much people, too much crowds, too much traffic, too much concrete, too much. Look at that spectacular background. You have now officially, cheers, the best background.
See?
Best background ever.
I think so. And it's just more fun. I mean, it's a beautiful day. Hopefully the sun, I should be protected for most of the time. And
yeah.
They paired me up. It was either BoucherCon or ITW. They teamed me up with I can't remember his name. It's not Adam Hamdi. It's a Brit guy older than Hamdi. I was really intimidated about meeting this guy. I hadn't read him. And he had just such an amazing resume. He had, you know, there's a lot of ex-military guys in this genre.
Yeah.
But this guy, you know, I mean, serious stuff. He had been taken prisoner and one thing after the other. And he turned out to be the sweetest, nicest, most fun guy.
Wow.
And a fantastic, you know, he afterwards he sent me some of his work. It was fantastic. But interestingly, I was out here like wearing my sunglasses in the blue sky, and he was in shadow because he has such a history in MI5 or MI6 or something. He hides his identity. He never reveals his identity. So he was in this like shadow.
Wow.
And then I was like, you know, the nerd in Hollywood, you know, out here in the, he had been a consultant in Hollywood. He had done consultancy on the one of my all-time great action sequences in Heat, the shootout in the street. Oh. He did consultancy on that. And I'm supposed to like talk about Hollywood to this guy.
Best shootout ever, right?
I just kind of like, a lot of times I find when I do things with authors, other like two tops with authors, you know, I don't know. It's only been a few of them. He was such a sweet guy, but I'm not going to name names, but there is a guy whose name I do remember. I'm not going to mention it, but we're not recording now, right?
Yes, we are.
Oh, we are.
Oh, sure. I take everything, dude. I'm old school.
Okay. Well, it's all right. I'm not going to mention his name anyway, but oftentimes I feel like I have so many questions. I hate talking about myself and I like asking questions. So I become sort of the de facto moderator in a way and just ask questions. And this guy, I'll figure it out. He was fascinating. I loved him.
All right. There's a couple things I'm going to say. First of all, I'm not sure that I'll be particularly fascinating, although you can ask all the questions you want. Number two, yeah. I don't have nearly the track record that you do, which is part of the reason I'm having this. But I do have a track record in radio, which gives me some pretty good pull to do podcasts.
Oh, you got the pipes of a voiceover DJ, artist.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, great luckily, voice. I spent 30 years doing that, so thank you. Yeah. But I know something about you, and that is you're a freaking engaging guy. I knew it intrinsically. I knew it intrinsically. I knew it somehow. I just somehow knew it. And then when you got on here instantly, I'm like, boom, this is the guy I was expecting to meet. Good. So good. Listen, we got almost all the time in the world, at least an hour-ish.
Yeah.
Hour and a half, and I have so many questions, but I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about you, so just get ready.
Yeah.
It was Thriller Fest 2019, my first one. You were giving out arcs of
Deep State. I wasn't there, but they gave out arcs of Deep State.
Okay.
I was not there. I have not done one in person yet. I have not done Boucher or ITW or any of them yet. I'm dying to go because I've met many people online through social media, et cetera, and yeah. Have become friendly with them and in a way that I never did in 3 decades as a screenwriter.
Yeah.
So I'm dying to get out there and drink beer and
all right. Out. You and I are drinking copious amounts of beer at the one in this coming year. KJ Howe and I have yet to connect to talk about some fun things I want to throw at her. But so I read Deep State in probably, I don't know, a day. It was just great. Haley Chill is freaking awesome. I have not finished Savage Road. I've been just too many stacked, but I have read enough to get a really good sense of where she's going. And I want to talk about her. Let's talk about her as we slide in to talk about you. Mm-hmm. And so Savage Road's about cyber attacks, but since you're more intimately familiar, how about you give my audience kind of a description, inside scoop of that really, you know, the tasty reasons they want to read that book and then get a copy today.
Well, it's always difficult for me to talk about the books in their tastier aspects because so much of my work relies on twists.
Right.
And it's even hard to talk about Savage Road if people haven't read Deep State. So I'm always very guarded and I'm always concerned that I'm not making it a very appetizing morsel of my descriptions, except to say that Savage Road definitely can operate as a standalone. You don't necessarily have to read them in order, though okay. It helps immensely. And I just did my first in-person event in Indianapolis at the Carmel Library event, which was a lot of fun. And I was asked that a million times. They had probably not a million, perhaps dozens of times. It was a really great event. They had lots of people there. And they had both of my books for...
I lost you for just a quick second.
But anyway, Savage Road... Okay. Maybe the outside thing is... Maybe I need to get one of those boosters.
Get a Though booster.
It seems like I have enough bars there. But anyway, yeah, you know, the way the book came about, you know, you always need to find the big bad, right? I mean, sure. What's the issue? What's the big issue? This is so long ago that I conceived this book. I feel like I'm talking about ancient history, but I just got on our good friend, the internet, and just what's the biggest threat, facing America today? Because my books are primarily domestic and not just set in the United States, but also in a loose way. And I've talked about this in the past. I'm interested in the ways that we can defeat ourselves and the way that we or people or institutions, et cetera, can undermine this wonderful, wonderful experiment in democracy that we're all enjoying today. And so the thing that popped out was, and this really does feel like ancient history, but was, you know, a cyber attack. Sure. And after I did my research, I read a stack of books and found as many articles online as I could about what exactly all of that entailed. I just had no idea at the time how fragile all of it was, everything that we do, the way that you and I are talking, the way that I'm going to cook my lunch today. Everything is connected. Everything is connected. And yeah. it's all vulnerable. And I guess the part that really jumped out at me the most was this idea that at the time, the idea that our government and military are essentially secure, but everything else, civilian and commercial, industrial, not protected, totally vulnerable. And also the fact that the cyber warfare is like a Cold War that's been going on for years. And we really led the way. We were the best at it for many years, but certain key players, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, have caught up. And so all this stuff has been going on without us having any, you know, except for a small number of people in Washington, that all these cyber landmines were being placed in our networks and industrial and commercial business infrastructure, just waiting to be set off. And so after I finished all my research, I ran out and purchased a generator and 30 days of freeze-dried foods, because I wasn't much of a prepper, and I'm still not a prepper, but it seemed really careless not to do something, you know. Sure. It's like living in beautiful Southern California, if you don't take some preparations for an earthquake that will come, you're just, you know, you're not living smart, and you're not taking care of your loved ones. So anyway, with that material, I just set about creating a story for this big bad, the sense of like a continuation of Haley's Chill's story. And she's a very, you know, for those who have not read any of the books, you know, she is a young woman of relentless determination, pure idealism, and fairly proficient skills, but she's
ass-kicking machine.
She's an ass-kicking machine, but she's not, I took some pains. And whenever I read a reader review suggesting that, you know, she's a super woman or, you know, indestructible, you know, I take mild offense to that, because I really wanted to create more of an every woman and every person.
And you did it.
Yeah, I think I did. I don't think you're reading it entirely carefully. I mean, she, you know, that was necessary for her to be able to be a player in these scenarios that I create. It was necessary for her to have some well above average skills and stamina and knowledge of technique. And I give her one little teeny tiny, you know, kind of special, it's not a power, but a gift, if you will, of memory, essentially just to have fun. I mean, at the end of the day, these things are supposed to be fun.
Sure, sure.
You know, the books, and my editor totally appreciates that fact, that, you know, you're reading for entertainment, and that's what I hope to deliver. God, I lost my train of thought, David.
Well, actually, you jumped ahead for me, because I was going to say, let's talk about Haley Chill, because I love this character. Because to your point, what I found so intriguing about her is that she feels like just a good Southern girl that came out of the mountains and not a redneck per se, but had this ability to just think on her feet, smarter than your average bear. And she was it martial arts or some form MMA?
Well, no, she was when we first meet her in Deep State, she's about to get into a boxing ring. So she's a boxing.
Okay, but she I think she mixes it up. But the point being is that's something you don't see every single day, a gal who's a boxer.
Right.
And so the fact that she was able to stand up and defend herself rather strategically was very impressive. So I didn't see her as a superhero. I just saw her as a smart, gritty survivor.
Good.
And just takes that expertise and this fitness regimen to the next level. That's all. So that's why I dig her. And where did Chill come from? I mean, that's just too friggin' cool.
Well, cool. It came from, you know, putting together character names is sort of like putting together titles for your works. And
I love it. Isn't it fun?
Well, it can be either really fun, sometimes very easy, and sometimes very difficult. I think, you know, I think I don't want to date myself, though. You know, it's kind of obvious in a video podcast, but I think it was sort of, you know, partly wanting to find a cool name, and also, you know, remembrance of a childhood crush on Haley Mills or something. So,
wow, you are dating yourself.
Yeah, a little bit. So that's where that came from.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, but, well, I mean, to your point about her physical skills, I think what, you know, I think what makes a character and a person, a real person, strongest is their belief system.
Yeah.
You know, that you can cut off a man's arm, but you can't, you know, you can't take the ideas and values and ideals out of his head. And as long as you have those values and ideals to fuel your motivations, and the purer they are, the better, you create a formidable character. And so for me, that's, you know, she has her flaws and very much human foibles that can undercut her progress through attaining, you know, completing a mission or fulfilling her goals or whatever. But you know, what the bedrock of her character is her belief in, you know, essentially the U.S. Constitution and its value.
But, you know, it's not just idealistic. It's something that's woven into who she is, which is another thing that the reason I believe her, so that when she gets into Savage Road and she's working in and around the president, you are allowed to believe, well, of course she's snuggled up to that level of proximity to power, because right. She has the goods to back it up.
Yeah.
She's not just somebody thrown into a situation like, wait a minute, you took a gal who we'll make this up in the cornfields and she's thrown into the White House and she's hanging out with the president. Mm-hmm. But the way you do it makes it great sense.
Right. You mean that's you're talking about one of those twists that will go unarticulated.
That is one of those twists that will go unarticulated.
Right.
I am failing to articulate that de-articulation. All right, you just froze. So I either scared you or we just have an intermittent.
Hopefully, the end of the character in the books will be such that to be revisually.
There you go. All right. I'm going to have you pick back up because I lost you. Let's do this because I'm fascinated by your background of screenplay writing. I do have a couple of credits here that you have. You've written several films: Sniper, Ultimate Kill, Never Back Down, Homeward Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Three video credits: Sniper, Ghost Shooter, Never Back Down, No Surrender, and Never Back Down 2, The Beatdown. So looks like you've done a series. And my first question is, how long have you been working on screenplay writing, and is that what took you to LA? Because you're not an LA native, correct?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm gonna rewind just a little further back.
Sure.
I've been writing something since I was, in high school.
Sure.
And so when I went to college, I think for my admission package, I wrote a bunch of poems. And then when I got to Reed College, I met up with some other like-minded folks and got turned on to Charles Bukowski and started writing. I wasn't writing totally Charles Bukowski type poetry, but I was a poet in college. And then towards the end of my college years, I was introduced to Sam Shepard and his plays.
Oh, yeah.
So then I decided I would move to New York and write stage plays, which I did for a number of years, and made exactly $0 doing that. it was fun, but it wasn't, it was no way to earn a living. And so I started casting around for ideas of how to support myself as a writer, and began reading screenplays for Gabriel Katzke, who was a New York-based film producer, very successful in the 70s and 80s and 90s. He did Falcon and the Snowman, and he did the original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, among other titles. And anyway, that was essentially my film education, was reading screenplays and books in galley form for Katzke. And so I wrote a screenplay, I think influenced by Falcon and Snowman, and being a big fan of Sean Penn, it was, I had Sean Penn in mind for this father and son drama, very heavy drama, dark, set in Texas, which is where I was born, and wrote that screenplay. I didn't know anyone in Hollywood, and Katzke, I can't even remember if he read it or not, but it wasn't for him, probably. But anyway, I sent it to a buddy of mine who was trying to be a producer out here in LA, and he read it and started sending it around and to real producers. And one of those producers read it. I guess he got my contact information from my friend Brian. And I was at my shit job in New York City, working the night shift somewhere. And I get a phone call literally from Hollywood, from LA. And which kind of blew my mind. And he said, the producer said, I had written a great screenplay. I should be out here writing screenplays for Hollywood. And I said, that sounds like a really good idea. And so 20 minutes or 10 minutes after that phone call, I get another phone call from a relatively big agent at one of the big three agencies. He said the same thing, essentially, from the reading from the same script.
Wow.
And then 15 minutes after that phone call, I get a call from an executive at Paramount and saying the same thing. So they're all got on the phone and talked about me and the screenplay. And so, you know, this was all really heady stuff. I've been banging my head against the wall in New York City for 8 years trying to become the next Sam Shepard. And here suddenly overnight, I'm discovered in Hollywood.
Right.
You know, they never bought that screenplay. I did fly out to LA almost within 2 weeks, and that agent sent me around on a round of meetings, and that executive at Paramount hired me for a job at Paramount to write a remake of a movie called was it The Rainmaker? I think it was The Rainmaker. To do a modern update of The Rainmaker. And, you know, that project went nowhere, obviously, but it got me my start. And that's how it happened. That's how...
You know how that's one in a million chances of that happening.
I know. I was very lucky. I mean, it was a lot of hard work. I always wrote. I was always writing, and I still do to this day. I still write almost every day. And it's kind of, you know, frankly, that story repeated itself in how I transitioned from writing screenplays for 30 years to writing books. I've talked at some length about that transition in various interviews and podcasts and events and stuff, book events, but in short, it's been a really happy transition. I learned a lot as a screenwriter. You know, the most substantial, most elemental thing I learned, I think, in making myself, you know, have some a reasonable acceptance in publishing, is to write in a way that engages your reader, because it's so difficult to get people to read in Hollywood. No one wants to read. You know, I mean, a guy, another screenwriter, a successful screenwriter, wrote a screed called "No, I Don't Want to Read Your Screenplay." I mean, and that encapsulates, you know, the way people feel about reading here. I mean, they hire people to do the reading for them and pay. That was my first job in Hollywood for $25-$30 a screenplay. That's how little people want to read. So in order to get people to like keep turning the pages, you have to really write prose and dialogue that every word counts, and it just has texture and interest, and the story moves and pops. And so I think I brought that with me, you know, and that's how I wrote Deep State. Deep State was my first book, my first novel. And you know, I hate to admit this, but I really didn't know what I was doing in terms of what was expected of me. And I think that helped, because I just like did what I wanted to do, because it seemed instinctively, it seemed right to me and fun, and had a way of carrying a reader forward, because that's how I write. If I write and I'm like, just feel like I'm just typing, I know that it's time to step away from the computer and wait till you feel that excitement that you're translating onto the page.
All right. Well, let me ask you something here, because I have had people say of some of my work, not to make this about me, but to bounce back to you, they have said that some of my earlier work feels like it was a screenplay. And at first I took that very personally as a negative. And then I found them saying, no. The reason I like that is because everything keeps moving forward and it's kind of sparse, and it gives me enough information for atmosphere, but not too much to weigh it down.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that says, when I hear agents, because I've had agents do this before, they pick up an excerpt of my work and go, reads like a screenplay. And I go, wow, is that a bad thing? Should it be more prose and more literary and so forth? But I'm like, when the stuff that I read, I just finished reading William Boyle's Shoot the Moonlight Out, and that is written in such a way that you're just constantly flying through it. It's inner, it's dialogue and inner dialogue. So I guess my question is, Chris, do you find yourself that having come from screenplay writing, well, evidently it's benefited you because you've banged out two books that are both very character driven and action driven, very little waste of anything, you know, take out the words that don't drive the story forward. So to you, it's worked. And do you see that as being a negative when people go, oh, it feels kind of like a screenplay?
Well, people say it in different ways. You know, you're like, oh, you're thin, or, oh, you're thin. You know, it's like, so it's like some people say it as an indictment. And, you know, honestly, after 3 decades in Hollywood, you get a very thick hide.
Yeah.
So I want people to like it, and I want, the more people who like it, the better. I want to sell a ton of books. But I also want to feel good about what I'm doing and feel proud about what I'm doing. And I need to do things a little differently. I mean, I've said it before, I'm the weirdo, you know, I do things a little differently. And some people like it, and I think more people like it, honestly, and some people don't. And if you don't, you can't please everybody. So, I mean, one of the devices that I just did, because it seemed at the time, it was literally spontaneous when I was writing Deep State, was to flash forward with secondary characters as they were leaving the stage, you know, just give you a brief paragraph, if that, of like what happens to them, and more to the point, like how did their experience interacting with Haley Chill, how did that affect their lives going forward? Why? Because I'm interested in that. I want to, I hate like not knowing. It just is fun for me to imagine it. And I think maybe the idea of it came from you know, where like at the end of Animal House, where they tell you at the very end and during the credit sequence, you know, what happened to various characters as they went on. And it's oftentimes done for comedic effect. I'm doing it for a slightly more dramatic effect. But, you know, some people, you know, if I go on Goodreads or Amazon, you know, some people go, oh, I really hated that. It distracted me. I don't care what happens to those characters. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing it. I do it a little bit in Savage Road. I can't remember if I did it in Storm Rising now, to tell you the truth. I think I did a little bit. I got to do things.
I know
it's, I just have to be who I am. You know,
sure.
I'm not Tom Clancy.
Right.
I'm not going to write like Tom Clancy. I'm not going to sit down and go, I've got to write more like Tom Clancy to sell Tom Clancy numbers of books.
Right.
I don't think I'd be very good at that.
Right.
I really don't. I got to do what I feel good about and what I feel like I'm good at. So, and what I read, I mean, I'm reading Jonathan Franzen right now. Very, very, you know, traditional, conventional, not in my genre, but in terms of prose writing, I mean, you can't get more sort of straight up conventional fictioning than that. But
Jonathan who?
Jonathan Franzen, literary fiction guy. But he's such a good writer that, you know, I can read that stuff.
And so do you find yourself learning something while you're reading it?
From him, not so much, just because I know I could never be that writer. But, you know, for inspiration, sometimes before I start a project, I'll pick up someone who is like light years above me, but it, just like a stylist who I'm not saying I can write as good, but their style and the way that they deal with language and tell story is something that can just spark me to sit down and be as good as I can fucking be good at this.
Right.
And so like before I started, I'm working on book four now. So I picked up and I was like a little bit of a slow start. And so I picked up Cormac McCarthy.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like his language is more like his prose is more like in line with what I do than Franzen is. So I'm reading Franzen just because it's just so great to read.
Yeah.
I enjoy it, but I read it more in my genre, but for that kind of, because I want to read the people I'm becoming friends with. But I don't really want to know how they do it because they have their own way. So I have like these sort of aspirational guys who just, I'm not even aspire. I wouldn't even say that. I'm just like as inspirational, I guess is the word. All his books I've loved. And I know he's not particularly, he's getting all, there's gripes, but everyone's griping in this day and age. So you can't.
Who gives a shit, Chris? Can I just say that for the record?
I don't, but it might not be terribly cool to like be saying how much I love Jonathan Franzen, though he doesn't, he certainly doesn't need my approval.
Yeah, but my point being is you like what you like. I like salty, crispy snacks. My wife likes gooey, sweet snacks. I don't like sweets. She's not all that keen on salt. Doesn't make it either one of us wrong. It's just what we like.
Well, certainly. I mean, that's why I always, if anyone starts getting chesty about a particular book or movie or TV show, and like, how could you possibly like that? I'm like, it's entertainment. We're not talking about math. We're not talking about climate change. We're not talking about physics. This is art and entertainment.
I have 100 questions that are riddling through my head, so I want to make sure I grab a couple of them. One of them has to do with Cormac McCarthy. Where did a guy who comes along and in some ways uses either no or very little punctuation, where did that guy come along and go one day, I'm going to use no punctuation. I don't care what anybody thinks about it. And all of a sudden, everyone uses him as an example of something fantastic. Yes, he is a great writer. Don't get me wrong. And there's so many of his books that I really love. But and that's a little bit of a tangent. But my point being, he was his own rule breaker at one time. So he broke the rules and they worked for him.
Yeah, I mean, it dovetails with what we were talking about earlier, David. I mean, on the occasions that someone comes to me and they want to be a writer, whether it's in screenplays, I have a different rap for people who want to be screenwriters, but I can pick, you can give me a page, tear a page out of any Franzen novel, tear a page out of any Cormac's work. I'll be able to identify that without seeing a title page. I mean, you need to, for me to be interested and for me to be an engaged author, I need to I need to know that I'm speaking with a voice. And so when I sat down and started working on Deep State and realized how much I was loving it as opposed to, my experiences as a screenwriter, which is a whole nother story, but I just felt like George W. Bush when I did that. I need to know that I'm writing with a voice, and I'm still working on it. I mean, it's developing. I mean, I just sat down on a whim and started writing Deep State, and now I'm on book four, in some ways book two was harder to write, because now there was stuff at stake,
expectations.
I had to, like, I didn't want to be a one-hit wonder. And I was more careful, I was like, it's like a baseball, it's like a hitter in baseball. It's like, he starts to press, he's trying too hard. So that took several more drafts. I had to go through that and kind of, massage it and loosen things up. But, and ultimately I think it came out great. The second book, just learned it got nominated for a Golden Poppy.
Wow.
Right?
Right.
Savage Road, Golden Poppy, distinguished California writers. And it's a big state, David. There's a lot of writers here.
It's nearly its own nation.
You know, like in high school, I was second in the state in butterfly, but that's Delaware. Delaware is a small state. That's saying very little. It's not the same as being the second estate in California high school butterfly, but anyway, voice. So that in answer to your, I think it was a question about how Cormac, I mean, something like that, you're reading and you go, oh shit, I can do that. You know, that just no punctuation, spare language, you know, vague kind of attributions of dialogue. I can do that. It's extremely hard to do well. And that guy, you know, he's been at it a long time, a true author, you know, that he's an authors like that are inspirations to me. And sure. When I pick up books and I don't feel that voice, it becomes difficult. It almost becomes a chore to read, especially if it's not, if the pages aren't snapping, you know? So, you know, these are all just ideas.
I'm going to insert something here and I don't always do this. I mean, the show is also young enough that I just haven't done it before. I'm going to launch something in December where I'm going to start doing reviews as part of the adjunct to the rest of the show. But I'm going to do this with you because I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, we're going to be in touch. There's a simpatico I feel with you for some reason. And so I'm going to recommend Shoot the Moonlight Out if you haven't read it yet with William Boyle, because I want to sit down with you later and talk about that book and how it affected you and if it affected you the same way it affected me. It's just a riveting book. I want to go back to something about screenplays because I'm secretly fascinated by it. I dabbled in screenplays, you know, a few years back. I would write one after the other. Only one of them went anywhere. And it was my very first novel that I wrote when I very first self-published, and I turned it into a screenplay and then I turned it into a film and I actually sold the film to Netflix and Amazon. So I must have known something I was doing and it's on Amazon and Netflix right now. But, you know, no one ever said to me, they did say, you know, you're not really much of a screenplay writer. So to that point, I thought, you know what, screw you. It just isn't hitting you the right way. And I agree with you. You do. I did three tours of duty in Los Angeles and you have to get to the point where you go fuck off because you know, you're going to do what you're going to do. So I think the fact that I was able to turn that into a screenplay and then a movie myself that I actually directed and raised the money for, I was just so determined. I was so Haley chilled, man, that I was going to do it my way. So all of that is a whole bunch of words, Chris, to say, do you agree? Do you feel like, you know, sometimes when it's screenplay writing, you got to just barrel through. And if you have a yearning to write screenplays and it's a tough business, I get it. And, you know, you're condensing 300-400 pages to 120 and it's got to hit on every single solitary beat, but run and with reckless abandon, wouldn't you agree? And just go after it. There's a lot in there, buddy. You got to chew on that a little bit.
Well, no, it depends on what your ambitions are, you know? And so to say, I want to write a screenplay. I always, you know, if someone says that to me, I always ask them, well, for whom, you know, who, for the studios to write your indie, I mean, to get a job writing screenplays or TV shows you can break it down a million different ways. So if you have a very personal story, I just got contacted. Someone emailed me from my website, my author website, and she was a librarian, I think, on the East Coast, and she had written a book. And it was something to do, I can't remember what it was. It had something to do with autism and I can't remember who the characters were, but she wanted me to consider writing the screenplay adaptation of the book. And, you know, I don't have, I'm busy with my own projects. That's not
sure. Something.
But I said, why don't you write that yourself? You know, I mean, it's a personal project. No one knows those characters in that story better than you. And it's a, the scale is small enough that, you know, if it came out really good and then you gave it to a director who directs indies and you went around and got financing years later, it might turn into a movie. And who knows, it might be an amazing movie that that goes to Sundance. That's a totally different path from, I want to write the next Avengers movie, you know?
Right.
I don't even know how you do that, to tell you the truth. I mean, that path, I don't know how that happens, honestly. I mean, that is not my, that's not my type of movie, the superhero movies. So I don't even know how those guys get those jobs. But I would say, if to write anything, you know, whether it's a screenplay or a novel or a opera or a book of poems, of course, write it, you know, because write it without expectations. That's what I always say. It's like, it's not the goal that you're doing this for, because it probably won't happen. You know, the movie won't get made. The book of poetry won't get published and win the Pulitzer. I went to New York and I spent 8 years trying to like become the next Sam Shepard. It never happened. Sam Shepard didn't need my, you know, like coexistence, you know,
right.
Fantastic man, fantastic playwright and actor and all those things. I really was sad to see him go, but
yeah,
he was a big influence. One thing leads to another as you're a writer. So it's a total cliche, a platitude. Oh, it's a combination of a cliche and a platitude, whatever that might be. But you write because you love to write. I have never had a day of writer's block in my life. And writing, you know, frankly, David, taking the morning away from my writing, I'm a little, because that's what I really love to do. That's what makes me feel fulfilled. That.
Are you just frozen me again? I'm going to wait for that to catch up.
To your question, which is.
Hang on 1 second. Okay, now you're back. So wait a minute. Are you telling me that you're pissed off at me because I ate into your morning writing time?
I am. I'm not pissed off.
Oh.
I'm mildly. No, not at all. I'm teasing you.
Okay.
But that's how much, I mean, I'll get my work done after lunch for sure. But
you had me, but you know what, dude, we could have, I mean, if all of a sudden you said, you know, Dave,
no, I'm teasing
your sucky little show. We could we no, do this at 1 o'clock when I'm done? I mean,
no, you're ridiculous. I'm never done. I take a quick lunch and then I get back to it.
Okay.
Wait,
let me interject a real quick question. If you're all right, you've got these two, you got, Deep State, Savage Road, and Storm Rising, which we still have to talk about. You're working on number four, but let me ask you this because I'm really curious about this. When you say you're writing every day, when you're writing, are you working on that fourth book, or do you, real important to me to know this, do you have time for that book? And then you say, I'm going to use this. It's going to be completely ridiculous, but you'll get a kick out of it. But you know, I want to secretly be a romance writer. So I'm working on this other romance on the side, just to kind of test my abilities there. So are you working on multiple things, or do you, are you just kind of knee deep and?
No. I'm a bit of a dingbat, so I can't do that. I need to be, I'm immersed in book four right now. So that's why it's almost difficult for me to like, get back into Savage Road, or even Storm Rising, which, I mean, I finished really the brunt of the work, I guess probably at the beginning of this year. And then the slow build to start writing book four. Have I talked about the title? I don't think I've even.
No. What am I writing?
I'm not going to say it.
What is it?
I'm not going to say it.
It's just a, between you, I'll hit pause. I'm hitting pause right now, Enrico. All right, go ahead and tell it to me.
I'm not talking. We can only talk about the upcoming book. I'm not talking about book four. Book four, I'm not working on book four. I'm going to go down the hill and golf this afternoon, David.
Are you really?
Yeah, no.
Do you like to golf?
I used to like to golf, but then my lower back decided that it didn't want me to golf anymore. So if I
came up and we went up to, there's a great little goat track up in Altadena way that we could.
You could probably coax me out, but I would hack my way. It would be an ugly scene. I swim. This morning I was at Rose Bowl Aquatic Center swimming.
Oh, wow.
So that's a kinder, gentler form of exercise. But
hey, do you ever go up to the antique show on, is it Sunday? Is it still Sundays? And is
Rose
it
Rose Bowl flea market?
Yeah, flea market. Yeah.
You ever go up there?
Not a flea market guy?
No, not a flea market guy. But I'll be working on the book, the manuscript for book four. But the production of book three is ongoing. I mean, we're just wrapping up. The arcs for Storm Rising will be arriving here any day now. So, and that's an ongoing process of, you know, reviewing edits and reviewing copy edits and making changes. So,
and you do have my address, right? So that you can send me an arc of that book so I can read that.
You'll send me. I'll definitely get you an arc. I'll definitely get you the arc. I'm very excited about Storm Rising. There's a connective narrative tissue between the three books, Deep State, Savage Road, and Storm Rising, involving Haley Chill's father. And you've probably picked that up. I don't know how far you've gotten into Savage Road, but...
enough to know that, which I won't give away.
In Savage Road, there's a very strong presence of Haley Chill's father and his story. And that story is resolved in Storm Rising.
Oh,
and
it, okay.
And the whole narrative kicks off on her attempts to find out what happened at the end of Savage Road, right?
Right. Yes.
Is her attempt to figure out what the hell, how did that come about regarding her father? I'm obviously being very vague here.
Yeah.
And that pursuit dovetails, and I'm using that word for the second time, sorry folks, dovetails with a much bigger, the big bad of book three is quite big in scale. It's the biggest, it's the biggest bad of all three books. And it's something, you know, it's weird. I was looking so we're talking about Storm Rising now. Again, you know, when trying to figure out what the hell you're going to write about, what is this book going to be about, on the macro scale, you know, I think I had seen an article about issues of white supremacists in the military, and I found a smattering of articles about it. It wasn't like, it didn't strike me like that. This was not a big issue, but for me, it seemed like an interesting issue, just fraught with dramatic potential because. The military, you know, I don't have experience in the military. My dad was in the military, but, you know, it's its own subculture. And so I looked into it and started to build out the story around it. And then while I'm writing it, the issue becomes a much bigger issue in the media. And, you know, plenty of people will dispute the fact that there is any issue or problem of white supremacy in the military, in the U.S. military. You know, things as they developed in the news since writing that book, it's become something of interest for me.
Could you be any more vague, please?
Yeah, no. I really can't. No. I don't think I can.
Side note, I love the cover of Storm Rising. It's not on your website yet, I noticed.
Yeah, I need to work on that.
Yeah, could you work on that? Because I really want to see it. It's such a sexy beast. Yes. of a cover.
I'm super excited about the cover.
So like it.
I love that cover.
Get on that, would you?
I'm going to get on that.
Chris?
I mean, it's weird. That book doesn't come out till May. And so the books came out in January. So now I have much more time. It created a bigger time between the two books. The one that, you know, Savage Road was released in January 21. This book's not, Slam Ryan come out in May 22. So I just haven't like gotten around to updating the website to reflect the release of the book. But
let's talk about that though. Here's the question. Do you find it beneficial or non-beneficial to have it, to be talking about it today? This is the end of October. It doesn't come out for another 5, 6, 7 months.
Is it 7 months? November? Yeah, 7 months. Six and a half months. Yeah.
I did that off the top of my head. I didn't even use my fingers.
Thank you, Rain Man.
Thank you. So my question, you know, I'm happy to talk about it now because I like you and I like your writing. And I want to talk about it. However, you know, I want to read it first so I can get really super geek. So I guess what I'm really kind of getting at is
you want an arc.
Well, no. We're going to get that. Is we're going to have to come back around, I don't know, like April, May before it drops, right?
Yeah, maybe. I know. Definitely come back.
Okay. So we'll just do the show from the golf course, maybe, or your vineyard there?
It's right down the hill.
Okay, gotcha.
It's right down the hill. It's right there. That's, I'm sure we can drop in and play 18.
Yeah.
Play 9.
Hey, listen, I'll be, hey, I always look at it this way. You can play 9, not feel very hurt at the end of it, lower back. I get
that. Right.
If you chunk it repeatedly, you know, by the time you get through 9, you're like, hey, you know what? That was a nice little outing. But if you're chunking and just having if you're having a shitty day for 18,
yeah, that's terrible.
That's not pretty. Nobody wins, Chris.
How often do you get out? Are you a player?
I do like to play. Here's an odd thing. I'm either in here doing podcasts or writing, and I've got one of the most gorgeous courses right up the hill, Encinitas, right up at the top of the hill, and I don't have anybody to play with. So, you know, I go do pickups or something, or if you came down, we could do it. But
yeah. Well, when the book finally comes out, I'll do events down there. I go to
Warwick's.
So yeah, we'll build in a little quick 9 or something.
I think that would be delightful. I want to be sure that I don't eat up all your time. We've covered Deep State, Savage Road. We've talked about as much about Storm Rising as we can. We're going to get that up on the website. We're going to read the arc. I'm so excited about number 4, which is being called Unnamed.
4 is going to be amazing. It's so amazing. It's going to be amazing.
Why is it going to be amazing, Chris?
Well, because it's not set. I can talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
Because we're friends. It's set in Hawaii.
Okay.
Which is totally weird. I think putting Haley Chill in Hawaii is such a freak out. So that's going to be fun. Okay. And I'm all of my books, especially books, Deep State and Storm Rising, there are controversial elements to them that could potentially piss off people. And I'm all right with that. I feel good about where I go with all this stuff. I share a sense of idealism and love of country that my character does, my franchise character does.
Sure.
Needless to say, book 4 is pure thriller. It's got a particularly diabolical plot with great characters. What are you writing now?
Well, just taking notes.
So pure I'm really thriller. Excited about it, but I'm always excited about whatever I'm working on. You have to be, or otherwise you can't get in there every day. And
sure. And what's your goal every day? 1500, 2000?
You know, I've been taking it easy. So I do anywhere between 1,000 and 1,500 a day because I have the time, and it depends. So sometimes where I get to a really great section, then it'll just pour out. And other days you got to do a podcast and you can't get to it.
So eats up your time, messes up your mojo.
Yeah.
These clowns just coming out of nowhere asking you the same old questions that everybody asks you.
You know, I'm getting emails from David Brown every day. It's like, can you talk to this guy? And I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
No, it's good. I love talking about it.
Sure.
I'm cognizant. I don't want to be boring. So
you're not, Chris. It is impossible for you to be boring.
Well, that's kind of you to say, but. I don't want to repeat myself either. So I try to come up with new things to talk about. And I feel like we did, I felt like we covered some good ground, especially talking about voice and Cormac and Franzen and writing, and that's all good. That's new stuff.
Dude, you're a fascinating chat. And if I wasn't just crushed on time, I literally could probably sit here and talk to you all afternoon.
What are you going to do next? What happens next?
I've got to run my wife. We're a one car family. I've got to run her to a gig. And then I've got to be cutting on yesterday's show that will air next week. And then I start cutting on your show that will air on Friday. So I've got a few things to do.
How long has the podcast been going on? How long have you been doing the podcast?
You are episode number, you're 25. Yeah. You're episode 25. So 25 weeks.
Wow. Wow. Wait. Who was number one?
May Cobb.
Who was your first guest?
May Cobb. And that was in June. So it's really just, I just started it, dude. And I'm booked now through January, halfway through January.
One a week.
One a week. Actually, I'm going to do a little something, and you're the very, this is the first time I've announced it. So I'm announcing it on the Chris Hottie Show. I'm doing two episodes a week for the month of November.
Because there's just so many people to get to?
So many people to get to. I've just had an influx of great people wanting to be on the show, and it's my way of having Thanksgiving. I'm giving back, Chris.
That's good.
Yeah.
This is a great community. I've said this stupidly a million times, but I'm so can you hear me? I'm getting that message again. I'm just so happy. I'm just like dumb with happiness of being part of this community. It's amazing. People are so supportive, and I'm just like the guy who's been released from his, three decade long, captivity in someone's mansion in the Hollywood Hills, and where I've been like pounding out screenplays for it's just so great. Everything about it is great, and I love the fact that writers like you and the crew review guys and the Ryan Stacks and everyone are doing these podcasts to just talk.
Well, we just love, we love the art form. I love podcasting because my first career, I think you knew this about me, was radio. So I did in all the major markets. And I did that for 25 years, took 20 years off to do other things. And now I'm coming back around and I'm going to do the next 20 doing podcasts. Because as I said to someone recently, I don't remember who it was, the best thing about podcast is it's international radio. We've got some of the I'm reaching people all around the world.
Yeah.
And I get to talk to cool guys like you about guys who are out there making it. Now, you're traditionally published. I'm a self-published guy. But I hold hope, Chris, that one day maybe somebody, Emily Bessler perhaps, would see my stuff and go, oh, my God, David, you're fantastic. You're almost as good as Chris.
Well, I want to read your stuff.
Okay.
So, we'll do an exchange via mail or something. I will do that.
Yeah.
I'll send you the ARC when it gets here, and or have David send you one. And
I'll be very intimidated, Chris, though, because you're a real writer, and I'm hacking at it. So, maybe you'll like my stuff.
I don't know. I mean, the marketplace, it's a it's a fickle beast. Who knows? You know, I don't, like I said, you have to, you know, I mean, the things I wrote for Hollywood that were my own, they never got made. I mean, not, well, what, Never Back Down was an original, but it was sort of written to hire almost. But the ones that were like sort of my, the things that really just sprung out, I mean, they didn't get made, but thankfully, you know, when you do something like that in Hollywood, you write something that are like, well, not a million years, we're going to fucking make this movie, but will you write you know, sequel to Talking Dogs and a Cat adventure period piece? And I'm like, yeah, sure, because I know it'll get made. And that was a fun experience. It was my first credit. But, you know, and then, but that wasn't me. So then I would turn around and write a Gladiator movie. And people would go, but wait a minute, didn't you write like Homeward Bound 2, Talking Dogs and a Cat Named Sassy? And I go, you know, I mean, I'm just a writer. I can write many, many things. And so that is my answer to you, sir, is I'm sure your stuff is great. And there's only equality between us.
Thank you. All right. I am going to watch that movie now that I think about it. But we're now, as we get ready to wrap the show, Chris, yes, we're going to do a little speed round of questions. It's off the top of your head. It's not complicated, but okay. We're going to start with this. Tammy and I are going to have you and a couple of friends over for dinner. Okay. Not far from you, right down the road here. Actually, Good. I want to know who are the two, you can bring two or three people. First two that pop into your head, they can be a dead or alive. Of course, they'll be alive when they come to our dinner party.
Right.
Who will round out our happy clan. Who would they be? Who would you like to have join us for this illustrious dinner?
Illustrious dinner. Hmm. Well, initially what popped in my head was I would bring my two grown sons, but that probably isn't the answer you're looking for. I would want to bring, Abraham Lincoln and Muhammad Ali. I think that would be fucking blast. That would be a fun dinner. I don't know Tammy, but I'm sure she would fit right in. But
she's delightful. She's the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's funny. That's the first Abraham Lincoln, I believe, but it's the second Muhammad Ali.
Oh, so really?
I like that.
You imagine those two guys like tag teaming and just sort of like going back and forth with it?
Yeah, see, this the one of the reasons I ask these questions is because I love to get inside the head of the reader to find out, you know, why would you pick them? And it's just great food for thought. All right. By the way, you're going to bring a covered dish with you. I know you like to travel, which we didn't even talk about yet, but I know you're a bit of a cook. So what would you bring as your covered dish, as we say in the South, and or a beverage, just while I'm thinking about it?
I make a pretty damn good pot of black beans.
Oh,
I would bring the black beans.
Ham hock in there?
No, no? I just some onions. No, it's just they're tasty. They're good. No ham.
Okay.
I'm not a vegetarian or anything, but yeah, I don't do that. So some some black beans, and I'd probably bring a decent bottle of tequila.
Oh, you're a tequila fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, my wife loves tequila. Now it brings out the beast in me. So I think Abe and Ali are going to really see another side of Dave.
Yeah, I would love to pour. I would love to pour for those guys. That would be fun.
Yeah. All right. Here, you've just gotten a great big fat check, Chris, and you're told to go disappear somewhere to chill in solitude. Just, it could be a mountain cabin. It could be a bench, a beach. It could be French Riviera, Italy. Where would you be going? And what books would you take with you? Now, it's only going to be, let's make it two books, easy. So where are you going? Two books. And what music will you listen to while you're in this secluded, we'll call it a month or so of your chill time?
That was like a multi-pronged question there.
It is. Is it complicated?
Asking favorite place, favorite books, and favorite music.
Yeah. So we'll go with favorite place. Just pick one.
Well, I'm going to go with, I mean, I've been to certain places that I really, really adore, but I think my new edict is to discover new places.
Okay.
So lately I've been having hankering for, I was just in Hawaii to research book four.
Doing research, right.
I know. I say that.
Right.
People always give me a hard time about it, but mm-hmm. I really, David, I really was doing research in Hawaii.
I was working hard.
But I'm not dumb, you know? It's like, I'm going to Greece.
Perfect.
A Greek island. I don't know which one.
Okay.
Books. I think I've just been reading about Selene, Ferdinand Selene. Do you know that? Ulysses S. Grant was apparently a great writer. I would probably bring his stuff because I want to see what made Grant such a great writer. He wrote about his war, you know, his campaigns.
Sure.
And then music. I listened to a lot of kind of, I don't even know the names of these groups or artists. It's just mixes on that Spotify has figured out what I like to listen to.
Right.
But I guess I would probably, considering where I'm at, I think I would bring some good, you know, jazz. Like, you know, it seems a little cliched, but I just think given that scenario, like Miles or Coltrane.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of, you know, a nice small house on a cliff overlooking the GNC and reading Grant and listening to, you know.
Some kind of blue. Yeah. Okay, last question, Chris Oddie. What's the one thing you cannot live without?
Well, my boys.
Okay.
Yeah, my two sons.
Fair enough. Where are they now?
They're local. One is in med school, third year med school, and he's nearby. He's doing his rotations now, third year, so he's all around here. He's actually working in Lancaster in the prison right now. I can't wait to get the debrief on that. But and then my older son is just down the road here in Echo Park and a musician. So yeah, I mean. You know, my sons couldn't live without
that's him. Awesome. You know? Hey, speaking of prison, and this spurred a question. If I was going to send you a book, and I'm only going to have an opportunity to send you one because you're a busy guy, would you rather read about a female ass-kicking private detective in Hollywood or a book about, it centers around a master chef in San Francisco, but the antagonist is a prison warden who has a very dark obsession? If you like Silence of the Lambs, you'll like the book Devour.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, that's what I'm going to send
you. That's a great title, too.
Thank you. I think you might like this. Chris, I cannot tell you, and I'm not a man of hyperbole, how much I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Good. I had a really good time, too. It was a lot of fun, David. I appreciate it. Let's do it again right before Storm Rising in April. Would that be too soon?
No, that'll be great. And then another time right before the next book, which is called?
Storm Rising.
No, the one after that.
Oh, I'm not telling you. But I will tell you this. I'm going to give you a little nugget.
Yeah.
I will give you a nugget. And I am sworn to secrecy.
Okay.
But I can hint. And I'm always hinting. I can't really talk about... I feel bad. Like I can't talk about my books enough in detail because I don't want to give stuff away.
Sure.
But there is, I will say this, David Temple. If you or anyone who is listening or viewing likes what you've read in my work mm-hmm. and is interested in Haley Chill, there very well could be something for you before May 3rd and the release of, I'm just saying that. David Brown, sorry. Sorry, man. I just had to say it. Could be something.
Could be something.
Could be something out there.
Could be something. You heard it here first, folks.
It's a secret.
Chris Oddie, thank you again, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Let's do it again. Let's play some golf.
And, yes. Drink tequila.
And drink tequila afterwards. I never drink in golf. And you know, thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
All right, sir.
That was all sorts of fun, wasn't it? What a cool dude. And a great writer. Thanks again, Chris. Okay, now on to next week's show. And this is where I share some really cool news that you heard first on the show. For the entire month of November, I'll be hosting not one, but two shows a week. That's right. They'll air on Mondays and Fridays for the whole month of November. Why? Well, we just have so many people who want to sit down with me to talk about their books. And me being the lover of great stories, well, I have a hard time saying no, frankly. So next week, you'll be meeting two gentlemen you're really going to enjoy. On Monday the 1st, William Boyle is my special guest. Bill is the author of Shoot the Moonlight Out. And I love that book. I think you're going to love it too. Then on Friday, William, you can call me Kent Krueger, visits us to talk about his latest book, Lightning Strike. Another great novel. Both guys are super nice. Their books are so good. And I hope you'll catch both shows. Again, on Monday the 1st with Bill Boyle and Friday the 5th with Kent Krueger. Thanks again for listening. And don't forget to leave us a quick review wherever you get your podcast. It takes people like you to help people like me grow this show. All right. I'm David Temple, and I'll see you next time on The Thriller Zone.